뭐야?
Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. This week on the show, Rabble Labour reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga sits down with Gowrie Srinivasan of the Canadian Council for Refugees to discuss the current state of Canada's temporary foreign worker program and the issues surrounding the closed work permit system. Here are Gowrie and Gabby in conversation. Take a listen.
Thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today, Gowrie.
It's great to be here.
And to get started, I wanted to know, what is the situation for migrant workers in Canada right now? What are some of the risks that they're facing?
Well, the risks that are inherent in the work of so many temporary foreign workers are many that stem from the nature of their terms, of their status in Canada, because their status is temporary. And because migrant worker status is tied to a specific employer, that they've been approved to come through a specific employer, they're in a power relationship where they can access employment, but they don't have the freedom of mobility that all other workers have access to. And so they are in a very different power relationship with their employer, and it makes it much harder for them to critique. In addition to those to critique any of the current, you know, work conditions that they have. So that's sort of structural built-in dangers and risks that migrant workers face currently. But on top of that, there is a very worrisome climate in Canada. So migrant workers are core members of our community, and they are essential pillars of many sectors of our society, from the care economy and healthcare and long-term care to agriculture and fish processing, to retail, grocery, the food system. So they are essential workers. And yet we have seen in the last 18 months to 2 years, a climate of increased scapegoating of migrant workers and significant shifts in the program and in the policies that are relevant to them that make their status more precarious in Canada, and that really shut down their options for pathways to permanence in Canada. And so I'm talking both about a shifting narrative that we hear from federal, provincial, and municipal leaders, as well as from many commentators and pundits, that has falsely blamed the crisis of cost of living and a crisis in housing to the existence of temporary foreign workers and temporary people with temporary status. So we've seen wholesale attacks in this narrative on both migrant workers and international students. And with this shifting narrative and a feeling, therefore, of increased precarity and vulnerability for many migrant workers, we are seeing new legislation tabled. So we have Bill C-2, which was tabled last June by the federal government, which is ostensibly a bill called the Strong Borders Act to address border security. Canadians have legitimate concerns about illegal weapons, about illegal drugs. But this bill, kind of masking as a bill that will look at dangerous goods and providing, you know, enforcement agencies with the powers they need, is in fact a really big grab, a shocking new grab for kinds of powers and authorities that are about bringing a more militarized approach to how we enforce borders. And for any worker who may fall out of status, this bill would bring in new powers for governments to track where people are and to compel service providers to give information about who is accessing services, and to really restrict access to protection for refugee claimants. and to generally provide a lot more budget and military power to CBSA for removals. So in this context, people with temporary status and or people who may be falling out of status soon because their work permits may not be renewed, face increased fears for their safety. And ironically, from a bill which is supposed to be about increasing safety for people in Canada. So we have great concerns about current trends, both in programs and legislation, but also in attitudes in Canada and what that means for temporary people of temporary status in Canada, including long-standing this long-standing program of temporary foreign workers and what it means for their rights.
You've touched on this a little bit, but I think I kind of want to pull on this thread a bit more. You've talked about, you know, the abuses that exist within the temporary foreign worker program, as well as the scapegoating. And I'm curious as well, because there are genuine just criticisms of the temporary foreign work program. So what was your reaction to earlier in September when Pierre Poilievre had put out calls to scrap the temporary foreign worker program?
Well, the move to scrap the temporary foreign work program entirely, it was just a kind of a red herring way to grab attention and to really, it really activates hate and xenophobia against foreigners. But when you actually look at the proposals, it is not to scrap the program entirely. It is to keep it phased in major sectors, for example, agriculture, because the very inflammatory narrative is designed to whip up support among Canadians who are and encourage a kind of an anti-immigrant sentiment to move. But in fact, in its details, demonstrates that there is a long-term addiction in this economy to the exploitation of temporary foreign workers, because the proposal is not going to do anything to actually address the exploitation or to end the temporary foreign workers programs in many core sectors. So the call from CCR and from migrant workers themselves has been repeatedly that the fundamental problem in the temporary foreign worker program is not that work is seasonal. There is seasonal work that is needed. It is the right of workers to freely move out of jobs where they are finding situations of exploitation and to have alternative pathways to permanent residence in Canada. So the current narrative is one that spreads a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment without actually addressing the flaws in the program. So CCR, together with Amnesty International and many migrant workers themselves, were on Parliament Hill last week, where the workers were speaking directly to the evidence and their experience and the truth of the systemic abuse that the program enables. It directly enables. And we know this mainly from the courageous reporting of migrant workers themselves, but it has been corroborated by UN experts. We know that parliamentary committees in the past have heard this testimony and called for the end to the closed work permit. So we basically have a solution in plain sight, which is to enable freedom for workers to leave exploitative employers, and proposals that are on the table that do anything but simply adopt that obvious recommendation. Instead, because of the long-term need to try and have labor that is exploitable because they are tied to the employer, the government has been only contemplating things like moving to a sectoral work permit or to place caps entirely on how many temporary residents are allowed in Canada, instead of just addressing what are the economic needs in Canada and how do we ensure that people who are able to come to fill those needs have decent work conditions and full rights like other workers.
So really, the solution that you're talking about here is about actually addressing the root problem behind the abuses, which is exploitation and relying on temporary foreign workers as exploitable labor. I'm curious then, if the temporary foreign work program, from your perspective, if it were to be scrapped, as Pierre Poilievre is suggesting, what would that mean for these migrant workers, especially given this anti-migrant sentiment that you've been pointing to?
Well, I think it's important to say that there is nobody who's actually proposing that the program be scrapped, because the economy and industries are so reliant on it. What CCR and workers' organizations are calling for are a transformation of the program so that it enables pathways to permanent residency for those who choose. Some may not choose that. And also that it provides freedom of mobility so that workers aren't trapped in exploitative situations. So it's a context in which if you removed migrant workers and migrant labor currently, we would not only have, you know, massive loss in our communities from the incredible contributions that people have been making through COVID in our old age homes, in putting food on our table, in our healthcare system, we would not only have a collapse of economic systems, we would be missing all the vital contributions that these workers make in our community. So it's an artificial headline because it would never be done. Instead, we should accept the fact that there is a permanent need in many industries for labor that is not being met in Canada. And how do we address the context in which we have economic needs that are met and we want to see certain industries grow while ensuring workers' rights, and decent working conditions?
We've been talking a lot about this anti-migrant sentiment and kind of these issues going on, the inflammatory narratives that are being pushed out around the temporary foreign work program, around migrants in general. How can people, you know, combat that? And how can we link, you know, workers' struggles of the migrant workers and just all workers with all workers in general and combat these kind of inflammatory stories that are being put out?
Yeah, I mean, the best way to protect workers is to enable them to access the services that they are already paying into, to enforce labor standards and to provide them the same basic rights that other workers have in Canada. And in this way, we see a lot of worker-to-worker solidarity. When we stood on Parliament Hill at the press conference last week, we had members of unions standing along with us, unions from Quebec, and we know that national unions also, like QP, for example, organize migrant workers because migrant workers' rights are workers' rights, and they are present in so many sectors of our economy. There is a lot of opportunity for workers to stand with workers and for people in Canada to support the need for us to essentially support freedom for workers instead of keeping them, you know, shackled in closed work permits and blaming them for economic challenges that are not of their making. An important way for us to think about combating the negative narrative that's out there is for the obligation and opportunity for all of us, when speaking to our neighbors, when speaking to our families, to talk about what matters. We know in Canada and in Quebec, we speak many languages, we come from many places. And across our differences, we look out for each other. And it's true whether our families got here 100 years ago or 100 days ago. We know that migrant workers are core members of our communities and that they perform essential tasks. And it was not that long ago. So people in Canada just need to turn back to thinking about the pandemic. Who were the people that were regularly putting themselves forward, packing our groceries in our local stores, harvesting food and caring for elders in long-term care facilities? And we want to call on anyone who is active and thinking about these issues to really reject the divide and conquer tactics that we're hearing from politicians that are trying to turn neighbor against neighbor, and also young person against young person, trying to describe this as a youth employment issue. We are proud to be a country that welcomes newcomers and that treats workers fairly. And we certainly expect our leaders to make this a place where workers' rights are respected and where all families can thrive. So it's really a context in which it's long past time for people in Canada to join the call to end closed work permits and enable pathways to permanent residencies for migrant workers, so that we build a country where all workers' rights are respected and all families can thrive. When you hear the testimony from workers about the conditions that they have endured, which range everything from literal theft of their wages. So employers withhold the wages that they may claim that they have spent in the costs of recruiting workers, unsanitary housing conditions, physical abuse, sexual abuse. These kinds of impacts and working conditions are enabled because the employer has all the power. They hold the labor market impact agreement that the worker permission to be in Canada. So the job is needed. Someone has assessed that there isn't someone in Canada who can do the job. We need workers to come and do the job. But the control that the closed work permit affords has just systematically bred conditions of abuse. One of the mistakes that is made is people thinking it's just a few bad apples, that migrant workers are generally well respected. They're here temporarily, then they go, and we just need to have enforcement measures in a few cases. And that is a wishful way of thinking that really doesn't respect the decades of evidence that we have from this program. So we can't pretend we don't know anymore. We've heard from migrant workers. We've heard from the experts. We know that the closed work permit is actually what enables and creates the conditions for that abuse. And so it's long past time to end that system.
It's like you had said earlier in this interview, there is a solution that is like out in the open that can be, strive towards. I'm curious, then, what is the path forward? You've mentioned the press conference that happened recently. It involved a number of different migrant rights organizations. What is the path forward to actually advocate for these changes to end these closed work permits to end this exploitation and abuse of migrant workers?
Well, I think we need to grow the public conversation in this country about what are the terms that we're willing to live with for both newcomers, because some temporary foreign workers arrive recently, but also for people who have been repeatedly coming to Canada. We need to grow the public conversation. What are the conditions that we're going to continue to allow to happen, and to grow a public movement to demand that these changes happen? We don't see any current signs of it from the government, but it's a context in which we have seen workers who band together and raise their voice and have allies from other sectors, whether that be from the health community, from people in the childcare community, or people working with refugees and migrants. We need to grow the movement to make those demands just so clear that the federal government is willing to make those transformations. But it will be a ways to come, because we know that this program has been entrenched for years. And I think what we've seen is that migrant workers that we have been working with, they feel empowered and emboldened when other allied organizations and other people in Canada stand with them. So we encourage people to send in letters to the federal government and to their local MP calling for an end to closed work permits, and to have those conversations with people in your community, in your neighborhood, and in your family about the fact that we have workers from many countries who have been making these enormous contributions, who are feeling less and less welcome and are starting to be scapegoated for issues that are from decades of neglect from government, and who are becoming more and more unsafe, feeling more and more unsafe in their communities. So where this goes is to continue to build solidarity between migrant workers and other allied sectors in the health sector, in the food service sector, in refugee and migrant serving communities, because we know that migrant workers are essential members of our community, making contributions in all sectors of the economy. They are our neighbors, and we know that we are stronger and better together. And it's very important that we ask ourselves as a country, we're in this really important moment where we are seeing, politicians abroad turn neighbor against neighbor and move for removing people without their rights. And we need to decide what kind of country we want to be and take action to both send in concerns to your member of parliament and to have those conversations in your own networks so that we send a message loud and clear that we want workers' rights to be respected and we want migrant workers to have options to have permanent pathways to Canada if they so choose, and that the current approach to deny workers their rights and to scapegoat them for our ills is not something that we'll stand by, because we want to build a future where we can all thrive together and where workers' rights are really respected.
Gary, thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Gabby.
That was Gowri Srinivasan of the Canadian Council for Refugees and Gabriella Galugay-Kasuga in conversation. Thank you so much for that, Gowri and Gabby. Switching gears now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. To do that, let's turn things over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting with national news. Two new candidates entered the NDP leadership race this week. First was Edmonton area NDP MP Heather McPherson, who announced her candidacy for the leadership last Sunday. McPherson laid out her vision for growing the party by doing away with so-called purity tests, explaining that she believed that many people were being excluded from the NDP for not agreeing with the party's base on every issue. Heather McPherson has served as the NDP's foreign affairs critic in the House of Commons for the last two sessions and was instrumental in the spring of 2024 in passing a motion calling for a suspension of all military aid to Israel. With her entry into the race, McPherson became the second officially recognized candidate in the contest, after journalist and activist Avi Lewis, who announced his candidacy the week prior. Just days after McPherson entered the race, International Longshore and Warehouse Union Canada President Rob Ashton announced that he too would be running to lead the federal NDP. Ashton has led his union since 2016 and is based out of BC. He claims that he will be the voice for the working class in this leadership contest. According to his campaign website, Ashton will be focusing on issues of affordability and income inequality. Ashton led his union through a strike and difficult bargaining negotiations with the government in the summer of 2023. Staying with national news, former NDP MPs and current NDP activists held a conference in Ottawa last week to go over their plans to renew their party after its devastating loss in the 2025 federal election. Former MPs Matthew Green and Peter Julian, along with party organizer Doris Ma, launched what they are calling the NDP Renewal Project. The trio say that they will be engaging with the grassroots of the party to discuss what went wrong in the election and what direction the party needs to take to secure its future. They are beginning with a nationwide survey of not only party members, past and present, but also labor leaders, activists, and others working in progressive spaces. They said that their group will not be endorsing any of the candidates for the NDP leadership, but hope that their work helps inform the race. In labor news, Canada Post workers walked off the job last week after the federal government gave the corporation permission to begin closing post offices and ending door-to-door delivery. This is the second time that the Canadian Union of Postal Workers has gone on strike in the past year, with the last strike taking place just before the holiday season in 2024. That strike came to an end when the federal government used legislation to force the union back to work. The union and Canada Post have been negotiating for more than 2 years, but clearly remain far apart. The Canadian Union of Postal Workers would like to see Canada Post expand and evolve its business model in order to remain sustainable, while the corporation is focused purely on cutting back on its operations to save costs. At time of reporting, the federal government has not indicated if they will again be using legislation to end the work stoppage. Also this week, in an op-ed on Rabble, former NDP policy director John Anderson argues for one new way Canada Post can grow its revenue: by getting involved in the banking business. Up until 1968, Canada Post did offer banking services, but stopped doing so at the same time as the U.S. Postal Service. Anderson argues that bringing back postal banking would not only help Canada Post, but also help those who prefer banking in person. The Canadian Bankers Association reports that all major banks and credit unions have been downsizing over the course of the past decade, with thousands of branches being closed. The Canadian Postmasters and Assistants Association found that over 2,600 small towns and rural communities that still have a post office do not have a bank branch. Anderson writes, quote, "Canada Post can be saved financially, and one important development has to be postal banking," end quote. And finally, Tuesday was the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, and a report by the nonprofit group Indigenous Watchdog shows that the path ahead to reconciliation remains a long one. In 2015, the National Truth and Reconciliation Commission, headed by Indigenous Justice Murray St. Clair, released their 94 calls to action. 10 years later, many of those calls to action have either not been started or their progress has stalled. Only 14 calls to action have been completed. Other key initiatives, like repudiating the doctrine of discovery and allowing those who were students of Indian residential schools to take back their Indigenous names, have not even been started. Prior to his passing in 2024, Sinclair explained that he knew that it would be a long process to achieve reconciliation, saying, quote, "We may not achieve reconciliation within my lifetime, or within the lifetime of my children, but we will be able to achieve it if we all commit to working towards it properly," end quote. And as always, you can read about all of the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.
This is Sukyun Lee, And you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.